The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
This is Jackson Brown, and you're listening to The Nicole Sandler Show.
Hey, this is John from Five for Fighting, and you got my buddy, my longtime friend, the lovely Nicole Sandler.
Hi, this is Donald Fagen.
And this is Walter Becker.
You know, Steely Dan. And you're listening to Nicole Sandler.
Hey, this is Jake Slichter.
John Munson.
Dan Wilson. We are Semisonic.
And you're listening to Nicole Sandler.
Hi, this is Melissa Etheridge, and you're listening to my friend, Nicole Sandler.
Hey, how you doing out there? This is Ziggy Marley, and you're listening to Nicole Sandler.
Hey, everybody, this is Pat Monahan from the band Train, and you're listening to Nicole Sandler, my favorite on-air personality.
The Nicole Sandler Show. Music to my ears.
All right. Welcome to a Friday, everybody. Friday. And it's not just any Friday. Yes, today is my birthday. And you know what? I didn't set it up this way. It just sort of happened organically. That's the best way. Why do I hear? I'm hearing weird noises. Anyway, so today we are not going to talk politics. I get pitched on books all the time. And an old friend of mine who had the most amazing career in Hollywood, still does actually, wrote his memoir. And today was the day, actually, that the publicist suggested that we speak. I'm talking about Bill Mumy. Now, you remember him as Billy Mumy, mostly, because he was the little kid who wished the bad men to the cornfields. You remember this, right?
You're a bad man. You're a very bad man.
Yeah, that Bill Mumy. Of course, he was in a number of Twilight Zone episodes. Then he went on to star as Will Robinson on Lost in Space. He did Babylon 5. He did a bunch of movies. You'll hear all about it because Bill has written his memoir. And he was going to join us live today. And then Wednesday night, I got an email, like late, saying, Bill is so sorry he can't make it on Friday. But all is good. We taped it yesterday, and I think you will enjoy it. I hope you enjoy it half as much as I did. So if we have a moment at the end of the show, I may play like a closing message, but I have a feeling we won't because the interview went long. In fact, we could have kept going, but I knew we had to end it. And anyway, with no further ado, I want to introduce you to my pal, Bill Mumy. Goes like this. I am so happy to welcome an old friend to the show, an old in a couple of senses of the word, Bill Mumy. We know him. We love him. I've known you longer than you've known me because I've known you my whole life, I think.
Well, I am old enough to kind of still remember our first meetings, Nicole. And that goes back over 30 years.
It does go back over 30 years. In fact, I've been doing some reminiscing because we're actually getting ready to move. And I'm a pack rat. And I've been pulling out old boxes of things. And I found a videotape that I made for my dad for his birthday 30 years ago this month. And he had an accident that left him quadriplegic. So I would fly, I don't know if you remember, I would fly home to visit him for weekends all the time during my days with Mark and Brian. And so it was his birthday and I didn't know what to get him. So I shot a video that was like a week in my life. And we go into my office at KLOS. And let me see if I can't bring this up for you, because I'm dubbing off this tape that I found that I had produced all those years ago. And in my office, I'm shooting video and you can see across from my desk a picture of my favorite Mumy. Let me try to bring it up. And my office was just the mess you would expect for people who know me. But let's see if I can, if you can even see this. On this picture, you see in the upper right-hand corner of the screen there?
Oh, gosh, yeah.
So you've been with me for a long time, my friend.
Wow, look at that. Yeah. Well, I remember you were here for a Thanksgiving, and then our crib went to you for a while.
Your crib went to my daughter, Allison. And in fact, I found this picture. I think I sent it to you a couple of years ago when I found it. But this is a photograph when your daughter Liliana was just born. I think you guys were just home from the hospital. And of course, I had to come over and see the baby. And so there's little Liliana. And she's now what, 30?
She's 28, and I was still in the hospital. That was probably the day she was born. Yeah, she's 28 now, and time is a bizarre river, Nicole.
You know, you've said that to me before, and in reading your new book, which we are going to be talking about, I realized the quote is attributed to your old friend. Who first said, time is a bizarre river?
This guy.
Oh, I thought it was Jonathan. What's his name?
Jonathan Harris.
Yes, I thought in the book
great
you would
Jonathan Harris. The one of a kind. Jonathan Harris.
Yes.
Who left 20 years ago to this day. He departed this planet for another realm. But no, you are incorrect, dear girl. It was this guy.
Wow. Well, it is a bizarre river, and the first time you said that to me, I thought, yeah, that makes sense. And to think all those years ago, and so you have been looking back on all those years, and you have written a brand new book. It's called Danger Will Robinson, The Full Moomy, and there it is. There you go. The other way. You're backwards. Here, I can.
Wow.
Yeah.
I've only been in show business 60 years. Give me a chance to get this shot right. Yeah.
60 years. Oh. That's amazing. It is amazing. And you are, you know, you're an icon. All I have to do is say, you know, and I did say Bill Mumy is going to spend my birthday with us. And people go, Danger Will Robinson. Or can he wish Donald Trump to the cornfields?
I've been trying for years now. My powers seem to have waned a bit, but I'm still working on that.
I guess. You know, I do. I have you. I have a wall of sound here. And every once in a while, I've got to whip you out.
You're a bad man. You're a very bad man.
Yeah, so that pops into my show every once in a while.
It should.
Of course it should. You know, I have so many great memories of you and your friends that you brought me into the fold. And I'm reading your book. I'm reading The Full Moomy. And just, God, you mention a lot of your old friends. And many of them were also child stars. But there's a core group that I got to know as well through you, that included Miguel Ferrer, the late wonderful Miguel Ferrer, David Jolliffe, who people might remember as, what's his name, Rusty in Room 222?
Bernie.
He was Bernie. I think Rusty because of the big red fro, right? And those two guys were in a band with you that back in the days of Mark and Brian used to come in and play for us. I also found this a few years ago where you and Miguel and David and Steve Lukather, who people know as the guy from Toto, amazing guitarist. You filled in for Mark and Brian when they were on vacation was it a whole week? I have one. Yeah. I have a part of one show. I didn't realize it was a whole week. And I was honored that you included me in your book when you mentioned that filling in for Mark and Brian there. Thank you for that.
Well, that was a milestone event. I mean, to be LA morning disc jockeys from 6 to 10 for a week, it was pretty wild. We had a lot of fun, and it got pretty out there, as I recall.
Yeah. Okay. So I've been busy pulling stuff from the archives, and towards the end of the, maybe it was in the middle of the show, I don't know, we had somebody call in. She asked to hear the Christmas song, which was a song that you wrote, recorded with the wonderful Sarah Taylor, called I've Got Some Presents for Santa, which I still play every now and then because it's just so brilliant. One of the best Christmas songs ever. But then the same girl said, well, here, I can play it for you. She said this.
Actually, no.
Oh.
Are we going to hear the PW song again? Ah, you want to hear the PW song?
What's that? She can actually say it.
That little tune called Pussy Whipped.
Actually, I've got it queued up from the Christmas show.
Oh, great. You know, this was a tune that Miguel and David and I wrote together a long time ago, about 5 years ago.
Yeah, what's the subject, Billy?
It was absolutely written about Dave's ex-wife. And he...
Nothing malicious.
No. But
nothing at all.
But everything in this song is true. I would call Dave on the phone, and his ex-wife...
My ex-wife should have been my manager, is what she should have
said. And say, hey, Dave, come on, let's jam or something. Let's get the guitars out and work on a song. And she would say, I don't want you calling Dave anymore.
During business hours.
Don't call Dave during business hours, because he has to go out and get a job. And there were
I never worked more in my life than when I was married.
Countless stories that we had to put down in lyrical form.
And it goes... In my life. Went something like this.
And here's the live version.
Here's Pussy Whipped on KLOS.
First time I've heard that live version from the Christmas show. We were rocking at 6:30 in the morning. That was cool. That was Luke there on lead guitar blazing through that solo.
Anything for the cats, man.
Sounds good, man.
We were very tie-tie.
Miguel singing lead there. Yeah, rocking out.
So a little taste of what we did on the radio 30 years ago next month.
You gotta send me a copy of that.
Oh, I absolutely will. You got it.
It makes me really miss Miggy right now.
I'm sure. So Miguel Ferrer was a dear friend of yours. He was the drummer for the Generators and sang Pussy Whipped. And he would come whenever he could because he was usually off filming a TV show or something, right? So he wasn't there at every Generators gig, but he was at a lot of them.
He was a core Generators yes. member and he was the soul of the group because Miguel really, really had a hard rock and spirit and a soul. And, when he was on location, he wouldn't be able to play right. and we didn't want, you know, not gig, but without Miguel. And when Miguel was alive and couldn't make it to a gig, it still carried the flavor. But once Miguel left this mortal coil, the energy there dissipated into a place that I don't think the Generators are going to ever regenerate. Mm.
Well, it was a great slice of life. And, I met Miguel through you, obviously. And one year, it might have been that very year, you and Eileen, your wonderful wife, brought me with you to the Christmas party at Miguel's mother's house. Now, Miguel's mother is Rosemary Clooney. I think I've told you the story before, but it is one of my moments, that one of those pinch me moments that most people don't get. Your son, Seth, was maybe 4 years old. And I went with you and Eileen and Seth to the Christmas party. Liliana wasn't even born yet. And you know, I'm pretty shy around people I don't know. And there I am. I walked into the kitchen to get a drink of water or something. And there's Rosemary Clooney sitting at the kitchen table talking to Seth. And I walked in just in time to hear her say, "You better watch out. You better not cry. You better not pout." And she sang the whole Santa Claus is Coming to Town to your little 4-year-old son. And I stood there saying, this is surreal. I just can't believe that I'm witnessing this. What a moment. And I lived that thanks to you.
Yeah. Well, you're welcome. I miss Rosemary as much as I miss Miguel. We spent well over 20 Christmas Eves with Rosemary and great respect and love to her. She was one of a kind and a terrific person and a gigantic talent.
You know, but you, Bill Mumy, have a lifetime of those memories with people like Rosemary Clooney, like Cloris Leachman, like Walter Matthau, like Jimmy Stewart, like it goes on and on because you've worked with all these people. And you tell about all these stories in the book. Now, Danger Wolf Robinson, The Full Mumy, is it out yet or is it available? It's available for pre-order.
It's available for pre-order and in 5 days on the, I believe it's the 8th.
Oh.
It's just a click away, supposedly, from, you know, everywhere. Whatever people want to get their books from. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I just wrote it. I didn't have any help writing it. It's 438 pages or something.
And a lot of pictures.
250 photographs is published by Next Chapter Publishing. And the lady, Mary McLaren, who runs this publishing company, had spent 30 some years at 20th Century Fox Studios working in their clearance department. So when it came time to clear all of these images from different films and television shows and musical projects, I couldn't have been working with a better person than Mary. And she got all those clearance projects done, which is great because it really enhances the stories. And, for years, it had been mentioned to me, oh, you ought to write a book. And actually about 25 years ago, I sat down and wrote a few chapters, and then just, it just wasn't right. And I resisted it for a long, long time. But last year, Next Chapter published a book that Angela Cartwright and I co-wrote, which was our memoirs on Lost in Space called Lost and Found in Space.
Right. The, that was the last time we spoke, actually, on the show.
Right. Yeah. Well, they did such a good job with that book. It was really a labor of love, and it flowed very quickly. But they did so well handling that, that they continued. Mary was like, come on, man, you ought to give it a try. Well, I've been home for 2 years. You know? I've been very prolific. I've been making music, and I've been writing, and I've been producing things. But I have really been pretty much, you know, in the house since the pandemic began. I haven't gone out much. I see my grandchildren.
You and me both. All right.
Yeah. But I'm not a big social guy, and I'm still a bit wary of going into crowds and things. So I've been staying home. So I was encouraged to give this another try. And I had resisted it for a long time, or maybe it had resisted me. But I sat down and I said to myself, well, there's no reason to write this in a chronological and then I,
right.
And she was, and I, so I just let these little chapters of memories of little, you know, arenas pop out spontaneously. And I wrote every day for about 5 months, which doesn't seem like a long time, but it just kind of flowed very quickly after that. And because it's modular, it's nonlinear, it jumps around from time and era. It felt good.
I'll bet. Because look, there are so many memories, and my career is nothing like yours. I'm reading yours like, oh my God, all the memories must come flooding back. And I'm guessing when you start writing a story, all of a sudden other things you would all of a sudden pop into your memory, perhaps that you had forgotten about before.
Well, it's true. First of all, you know, my career covers, it's a very eclectic career, and it covers a lot of territory, from science fiction to westerns to dramas to comedies to comic books to music to tours to producing, yep, voiceovers, animation, all that stuff. It has these different appendages. And I've been very lucky that, you know, Eileen and I have been together 40 years.
Wow.
So, you know, Eileen would say to me, hey, did you write about that time you, and I went, oh no, I forgot about that.
Wow.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And I would just get up, you know, and come into my office and get another 10 pages of something done and go back to sleep.
But
so it was cool.
Yeah. Now, you say you were prolific. Now, people know you, of course, they know you. They've known you since you were a child. When we saw you as Anthony, who wished people to the cornfield, we saw you in a number of Twilight Zone episodes and a lot of other episodic TV. We'll talk about some of that in a minute. And then, of course, Lost in Space. But the thing that people may not have known about you during all that time is music. Music has always been a big part of your life. So we played the song from the Generators, but you've had bands since you were a kid too. You've been, in fact, you brought your guitar and a stereo on set in your dressing room because music has always been there for you. Yeah.
Oh yeah. From the age, look, I started working as an actor when I was, you know, well, four, but technically five, so to speak. And I was very, lucky to work as prolifically as I did in so many different eclectic type projects. But by the time I was 10, I started playing guitar and started taking, you know, guitar lessons. And that became my personal passion and my personal destiny. You know, there's many episodes, seven or eight of them, I think, where Will Robinson on Lost in Space is playing, you know, right, his guitar for some reason on some bad foam rubber rock bass, singing like Sloop John B., which is actually very applicable because it's the story of a sailor who wants to go home, or just strumming and stuff. But music has always been what's driven me since that age. Now, I had a previous career as an actor, and I enjoyed that. So I continued to work as an actor. But But from 10 on, it was really the music that was what I was personally all about.
And even you've had a lot of successes, not necessarily under your name. Probably your, I hate to say, your biggest hit.
I know.
Came as half of Barnes and Barnes. And I don't have Fish Heads queued up, but all I have to do is say it and people know it, right? I do have this queued up. It's a photograph from KSCA, the station I went to after I left Mark and Brian. And there you are with Dr. Demento and Weird Al in our studios. I wasn't there at the time, but you were there.
Yeah, Barnes and Barnes used to be character guests on Dr. Demento's show multiple times a month, and Weird Al. In fact, I'm going to see Weird Al's film tonight at a cast and crew screening with him. I'm a little nervous about that. I'm going to wear a mask.
Of course, please. Good.
And Dr. Demento, without Dr. Demento, you know, there wouldn't have been the kind of global success we had as Barnes and Barnes, especially with Fish Heads. But you never know exactly, you know, you throw a lot of stuff out. I mean, it's like acting. I did a lot of dramas. I did a lot of comedies. I did a lot of Westerns. I did a lot of doctor shows and lawyer shows. Barnes and Barnes just tossed Fish Heads out there. And, you know, it's kind of tattooed on my showbiz tiara. But Fish Heads has been very, very good to us. And Barnes and Barnes still makes music occasionally. We put out an album last year called Pancake Dream, which was more like a dramatic Twilight Zone psycho drama.
And you did it all remotely because of COVID, right?
Oh, absolutely. I've finished like three different albums in with different partners by file sharing and working at home, which I find to be a great blessing. I mean, look, nothing's really going to be better than being in a great recording studio with, you know, four or five other musicians looking at each other going 3-4 and playing together.
Right.
But nonetheless, when you can sit here and you can record your tracks and send that off to somebody to add a harmony part or add a keyboard part or whatever it might be, and it comes back and it syncs right up and it's right there, it's almost like you've been playing with them and live. It's not quite the same, but it works very well. I'm grateful for that.
It is great. And what a wonderful tool to have. And, you know, but you kept busy. I mean, you're on Facebook and you're pretty active on Facebook, which is very nice for the fans because you got a big following and they like to hear from you. And you share stories and you share music. And I hope you don't mind. I'm going to play another quick song. It only runs over just a little over 2 minutes. But you put this out right at the beginning of the lockdown and the pandemic, when we thought we were going to be home for like a month or a couple of weeks or something, I think they first told us. But you released this song that I couldn't get enough of. And I think I called you or I texted you or something. I said, can I play that on the air? And you sent it to me. And I thought it was brilliant. It's this.
Well, hello, people. What a crazy scene. Here we all are in quarantine. Let's not go crazy. Let's do what's best. Try taking deep breaths. Get lots of rest. 'Cause we're social distancing now. But someday soon, I hope, dancing together again. In the meantime, wash with lots of soap. Don't be cranky, don't freak out. Cough into a hanky, try not to pout. 'Cause we're social distancing now. But someday soon, I hope, we'll be dancing together again. Meanwhile, wash with lots of soap. Catch up on reading, watch TV, maybe love.
Lost in Space, featuring me. Listen to some music. Yoga's good. Stay hydrated like you always should, because we're social distancing now. But someday soon, I hope, we'll be dancing together again. Meanwhile, wash with lots of soap. One of these weeks, months or days, things will go back to normal crazy ways. Then something new will come along, and we'll do it all again.
Bill Mumy, social distancing now. I love it, and it holds up. I mean, that was in March of 2020 you did that. You remember?
Yeah, you know, I got to get a haircut. I'm just a, technically, I'm just an old folkie.
Yeah.
And folk music was about telling stories about what was going on around you, right?
Right.
And, yeah, I wrote a whole album of songs from different perspective, different Americans' perspectives regarding the onslaught of the pandemic. And I recorded them all here by myself and then sent them to my bandmates in Action Skulls, Vicki Peterson from the Bangles and John Cowsill from the Cowsills and the Beach Boys. And they added their harmonies to it. And that album, which is called A Different World, is streamable, and we just got, I think it must be the first album that addresses the pandemic, because it was out in April.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, but that's just kind of how I am. I get these, the muse visits me, and I appreciate that more than anything else. And I learned maybe 30 years ago never to say, well, I'll get to you later. You know, or like, hold on, I'm watching a show, or boy, if I start to feel a song coming or an idea coming or something, I always have learned to respect and be grateful for that and go right to it. And usually when that happens, I'll get a few weeks of things, you know, that could be the book. It could be an album. It could be a handful of songs. It could be some stories for comic books or scripts, but it usually comes to me in a full batch. Like enough to do a real project, and then it cruises on, you know, to somebody else. and then out of the blue, it just comes back. And I'm so grateful that it continues to visit me, because the stuff I do is genuinely inspired. If you hire me to write a theme song, you know, I'm a craftsman and I can do that.
Right.
But it isn't what I choose to do anymore. I mean, I certainly, if somebody wants a song, I'll do it. But basically, I don't create unless it's a real, legitimate, inspired thing. And because I'm still prolific that way, I can't say there's anything else, that maybe my family's health.
Right.
Besides, there's nothing else I'm more grateful to than the muse continuing to hang around for me.
And it comes in different ways too. So we know you as an actor, we know you as a musician. Certainly I have for 30 years. And I read in your book that you started painting. Well, guess what? So did I during the pandemic. You see the dogs behind me? I don't know if you remember Sasha and Pooh. They were my two dogs that I got after I lost my wonderful Sandy. That's who those two are. So I started doing pet portraits. I didn't know I could. I never painted before I turned 60. So we don't know where the muse comes from. Sometimes it just hits us. And some people are more blessed than others, because you're incredibly talented. So now you're selling some of your paintings, yes?
Well, a couple of them and things. First of all, I admire your work very much. I see it on social media.
Oh,
I know how talented you are as an artist, as a realistic, you know, here's an
dogs.
Art piece.
That I can do dogs. That's
like, yeah, but I mean, they look like almost photographs. They're so well done.
Thank
you. I mean, my stuff is a little more abstract and primal. you know, primitive and I don't know what inspires it, but I did go through a phase last year where I painted about 30 little pieces, and I painted a couple the other day. I don't know, you know, sometimes Angela Cartwright wants to put them up and sell them, or my wife says, oh, you know, we should make a few prints of this or something. I'm bad with the business stuff. I'm really good with the creative stuff, the follow through. I don't mind this kind of follow through
right.
in terms of promotion, but in terms of like
the business, you know, end of it, I'm so with you.
And UPS and things like that. Yep. I that's not something I'm very, that's not a strong suit of mine. I leave that up to the other people.
Yeah. I wish I had those people, because I'm not good at the business end either. I like the creative stuff, and the business stuff, I just like, it'll take care of itself, but it doesn't. Bill Mumy is with us. We're talking about his book. We're talking about music, art. Are those your Pez dispensers behind you?
No.
No.
Do you want to see my wall of Pez?
Yeah. So Bill Mumy has, one of the first things that you showed me when I first visited your house was the secret room with all the Pez dispensers. And here,
no, this is
but
not,
it's not in the secret room anymore, right?
No.
Okay, you moved them.
I'll try and set this up for you so okay. that you can see it, but I'm like, can you see the wall of Pez?
There they are. Yep. Wow.
Is it framed okay?
It's framed okay. You can move a little bit to the right, like turn it slightly. There you go. To the right. No, the other right. Yeah, there you go. Those are all Pez dispensers, and you've been collecting them for how long?
I started collecting Pez when I was about 6.
Wow.
And what I would do, okay, I'm going back
okay,
to this.
Okay, that's good.
What I would do is, I was working as an actor at basically all the different studios in town, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I wasn't under contract to a series until Lost in Space. So, and I did, you know, well over 100 things before that. So I would go to these different studios, and every sound stage had a little foyer. At every studio, every soundstage had a little foyer entrance place where there would be a cigarette machine and a drinking fountain, water fountain, and a candy machine. And then usually, you know, two bathrooms. And in every stage, the candy machines were different. So if I was working at MGM, when we wrapped or maybe at lunch, I would go to every stage looking in the candy machines for Pez dispensers, because for a quarter, or I think it was a quarter, you know, you might find a die cut Casper on stage 11 at MGM, and you might find a Bullwinkle at Universal, or, you know, a regular, which are my favorites, the regular ones that look like lighters. Uh-huh. Maybe I'd find that at, you know, Paramount or Fox or something. And so I would collect them at every gig I went to. I would scour the sets and scour the lot for various new Pez dispensers. And I enjoyed them a lot. So I guess when my parents sold their house in 1976, my folks called me and said, okay, there's a couple of boxes of your stuff that's in the garage. Come and get it. And besides some other things, all of my old Aurora model kits that I had built and painted when I was a kid, and this box of Pez dispensers, probably maybe 40 of them. I went and got them, and I went, oh, God, this is so cool. This is great. And that began a passion of mine, which led to, because of my... I don't know. I hate to use the word celebrity, but because of my celebrity, I've spent a lot of decades going to science fiction and comic book conventions, because I was writing comic books, or I'm a sci-fi actor guy. So I would be flown all over the country or the planet to go to these conventions and sign autographs and do question and answer things. But there would always be Pez dealers at these events. So within a short amount of time, Starting with my basic original Pez that I had as a little boy, which I had kept in mostly good condition. A couple of the very most valuable ones were trashed, which is a shame. But I would grow the collection by going to these conventions and adding a few Pez along the way. And did you know that, this is interesting to me, do you know that eBay was created to trade Pez?
No. Really?
Yeah, eBay started absolutely and only about Pez.
Wow. And do they still make Pez? I'm guessing they do.
They make fabulous new Pez constantly, and the rules have changed over the last 20 years or so. But I don't have room for the new ones. I mean, you saw the
display.
I can't build another one of those. I don't have any more walls.
No, because your guitars take up some of the wall space too.
I have a lot of guitars.
A lot of guitars. Most people have like paintings on the walls. Bill Mumy has guitars on the walls, up and down the stairs. Yeah, there's a few of them. Yeah, a lot of guitars. Yeah, we know what your other passion is. And the other part of your passion is your family. So I had a collection.
I don't have them on the wall.
No, you don't have them on the wall. However,
they're running free.
Every Christmas, you guys, for I don't know how many years, I would get my Mumy Christmas card. And I always look forward to it because you would do a picture with the family. First, it was you and Eileen, then you and Eileen and Seth, then you and Eileen and Seth and Liliana. And now I'm guessing you got the two grandchildren in the pictures. And you take the photo in the same place at your house every year. You're usually holding a guitar and the family's there. And we see them all grow up. And it's just, it's a wonderful tradition that you do.
Well, I love it. And it's very important to me. And the rest of them, they just put up with me. They know that I like it. And they show up and they grin and let me have my way. We've been doing it for, I think, 34 years. It's been just a couple of locations, but it's the last 20 or so have been in the same spot. And in all 34 of them or 33 of them, there has never been a repeat. Everyone has a different guitar.
Oh, wow.
And yes, the kids, certainly that's how you can gauge time, because Eileen looks the same but the kids grow.
You know, you have a website, it's at billmumy.com, and part of it, you have the Mumy family album. And let me just, you've got some of these photographs that I'm sure are for the Christmas card session. So there's a very young Liliana. There's a not quite as young and little older. And yeah. And so these pictures are all there, and just seeing your kids grow up. And now, Bill Mumy, your grandpa. So how is that?
It's the best. I don't want to sound like an old fogey, but when the pandemic, actually before the pandemic started, Seth and my daughter-in-law, Alexa, and Presley moved into our house because their house was being renovated. So they lived here for about 7 months when Presley was about a year and a half. So every morning, every day, every night, you know, I got to be with her. And then Isla was conceived here during the pandemic. So I have a really great bond with the girls. I see them almost every day. I can't tell you how wonderful it is to have your family so close. My son, Alexa, Presley, and Isla live literally 4 minutes from me.
Oh, wow. That's great.
I mean, technically you could walk, but it's a lot of, you know.
Sure. It's hilly where you live.
They live 4 minutes away. And Liliana and her fiance, Ben, live maybe 9 minutes away.
Oh, nice.
You know, it's a real, I mean, you want your children to fly the nest, and you want them to find their destinies, and you want to support whatever choices they make. But I'm very happy that they're close.
I'll bet.
It's really nice. It makes such a difference, especially during the years we've just gone through. Because, again, I haven't been on a plane since, I don't know, February of 2020 or something. Yeah. I don't want to be doing conventions or anything. You know, I appreciate the fans, and of course I do. But, you know, I have a lot of friends who are back out on the road on tours. Yeah. And I've seen their tours canceled midstream like four or five times.
Yeah.
And that goes, that it's not just the little guys playing clubs. It's Ringo.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
It's America. It's the Beach Boys. It's big security, big bands and everything. And somebody in the crew gets it, or one of the guys in the band gets it. Everything stops. I just don't, you know, a convention, you know, people want to put their arms around you and take a picture with you. And
they want to kiss you and they want to touch you. And
I mean, I've done that since the 70s, and I don't have any problems, you know, hanging with fans or
but not in the time of COVID.
No, I just don't want to do it, you know, and I don't want to ask my friends to come see me in a club that seats 200 people now.
I understand. Completely.
A lot of my friends are doing that again. And like they say, hey, are you going to go? And I like, oh, no, but I'm not going to ask you to come see me either.
Right.
So, you know,
I hear you.
So a lot of people think it's over.
No, it's not over.
It doesn't feel that way to me. I was on the phone with a longtime friend of mine last night in New York. He just traveled and now he has COVID.
Oh, God.
And he's kind of shrugging it off like, oh, it's not that bad. I'm just having trouble breathing.
Yeah, and, not that bad. Like, it's just breathing.
Like, yeah. You know, okay, well, that doesn't sound good. And of course, the thing that's so unpredictable is different people are affected in different ways. And I don't want to be one of those guys who gets long time COVID.
No,
you know,
no,
I'm foggy enough as it is.
Tell me about it. Speaking for myself, I'm with you 100%, Bill. We don't go anywhere. I'll tell you, we are going to see in 2 weeks, Bonnie Raitt. I've been to, so do I, and she's coming and actually invited us to the show, and I will go with mask, but I'm not going to turn down seeing Bonnie Raitt. We rarely go out either. And I understand it's, you deal with it, what's going on around you, but it's wonderful that you've got your family there. You know, Allison, who slept in Liliana's crib when I adopted her, you guys were kind enough, cause she was already 18 months old. So she wasn't going to need the crib that long. And you're like, you can have Liliana's crib. Well, Allison always knew. And I remember we went to, when she was little, we went to see, what was the movie? The Steve Martin, the remake that Liliana was in.
Cheaper by the Dozen.
Cheaper by the Dozen. And when Liliana came on the screen, I said, that's Liliana. And she said, I slept in her crib. So, because that's what she knew of Liliana. But now, so Liliana made some movies. I know Seth did one or two when he was little, but did neither one of them want to continue in your footsteps, or what are they both doing?
Well, I don't know if either one of them ever thought they were in my footsteps, but Liliana started working when she was 7. She did quite a lot of on-camera work.
Yeah.
The Cheaper by the Dozen films, the Santa Claus 2 and 3
Santa
films.
Claus, that's what it was. It was the Santa Claus movies, yeah.
Tons of episodics. She did a series with Benjamin Bratt called The Cleaner. But from the age of 7, Liliana started doing animation. And she has not had a series on the air since she was 7. For the last 5 years, she's been a main voice on the number two show on Nickelodeon called The Loud House. They made two feature films, and they are still an ongoing series. So
good for her. That's awesome.
Yeah, when she was around 16, she did this show, The Cleaner, and she had to like have a make out scene with her boyfriend on the show. And A, it made her uncomfortable. B, it made her boyfriend in real life at the time uncomfortable. And she chose to say, you know what? I've got a great voiceover animation career going. I'm going to pull back from the on-camera stuff. And she's just kept working in animation. Plus, she's also following in her mother's footsteps, she's a workout teacher.
Oh, wow.
Barry's boot camps all over Southern California. She teaches about 9 classes a week. And Seth, when he was a little boy, he co-starred in Three Wishes with Patrick Swayze.
Right. That's, yeah, I remember that.
Beautiful little film. Mm-hmm. Then he did the film Dear God with Greg Kinnear.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
And Jack Klugman, he worked with Jack Klugman in that. And Jack Klugman and I had a lovely chat reconnection at the cast and crew party for that, because I had worked on the Twilight Zone. Oh, that's Jack.
I said Walter Matthau, but I meant Jack Klugman. Sorry.
And you know what? I was going to correct you, but here we are.
Yep. And I could, there we go. Yep.
So anyway, Seth is a very successful father of two, and he is an attorney at law who practices sports, attorney negotiation contracts and music business, show business.
Oh, wow.
Business attorney. He's he went through a lot of different things, you know. He had a band, he wrote some good songs, he plays the guitar, but he is married to his middle school sweetheart. They were together from the sixth grade on.
Oh my, that's wonderful.
And you know, when they broke up during college times for a few years, you know, he had his little single scene, but all along he wanted to be with Alexa. And it's so wonderful. They've been together forever. They have their lovely home and their two daughters and their two dogs, and they're great.
Oh, I'm so happy to hear this. You know, you hear this horror stories of the child actors who lead troubled lives. Bill Mumy, you're a testament to it doesn't have to be that way. You've had a wonderful, a really, really good life. And you've given that to your kids and your family and your friends. And, I'm so glad I know you. I was thrilled when I saw you had the book. I just blew through it in like 2 days. I didn't get the whole thing. I still have parts of it. And I'm just loving every minute of it. You start talking about your time filming the movie Papillon. And frankly, I'd forgotten you were in that film because it's been so many years since I saw it. But it brought back all those memories. Bless the beasts and the children. Obviously, your story about Alfred Hitchcock really freaked me out, because you don't speak ill of anybody. But you did not really appreciate Alfred Hitchcock, right?
No, I don't mind speaking ill about Hitchcock. Yeah, he, you know, honestly, I don't know how many shows, 600-700 shows now, by now, I think, with all the Ancient Aliens production and all the voiceovers. But I would say there's only been a few people in my entire career that were assholes. And he was an asshole.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, the book is filmed.
When you're working on a film, when you're working in television, it's the epitome of collaboration. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. I mean, the whole ego thing has to be kept in check. It doesn't matter if you've memorized a 5-page dramatic scene and you're in the middle of delivering a speech. If the boom guy carrying the mic drops it a little bit into the frame, or if one of the lights up on the rafters, you know, misses a cue or something. If the guy's pushing the dolly with the camera on it over or under misses his mark, it's out of focus. I mean, it's like a big orchestra. And it doesn't matter if you're the lead singer or if you're just hitting a triangle in the back, you all have to groove together. And, I learned that very early on. And most people that I've worked with have understood that collaboration spirit, and that, you know, we're just one big band here trying to groove together. But once in a while, you have some creepy people that think it's all about them, and they disrespect other people, and that messes things up for everybody.
Without a doubt. And I rarely in the, you know, it's been a while since we've spoken, but in the years I've known you, you don't speak ill of other people. And when I saw that, I understood why you felt the way about Alfred Hitchcock. But you have stories like that throughout the book. So it was a treat for me to read. I know you've got a lot of fans out there, again, because the few times you've been on with me or I've mentioned you, people know you and they love you. Because we've grown up with you. We have, before I met you, I knew you. And that's why I think when we did meet, besides the fact that you're just a warm, wonderful person, I always felt comfortable with you. We were immediate friends, and I leaned to, and I miss you guys. I really miss you guys. Hopefully we'll see you again one of these days.
Absolutely. You're always welcome here at Moomin Manor. You know that. And I mean, I agree with you. There's a certain thing about my connectivity because I worked in the golden age, classic age of television with iconic movie stars from the 30s and the 40s. So that in a way, I'm bridging back beyond my own years. That's in right. That early work. Because if I was working with Claude Rains or, you know, Franch Othon or Judy Garland or those, you know, if I'm working with people of that era, it takes me back even further. And then into this, the psychedelic 60s and the whole crazy pop era. And then into the 70s where it was like, you know, artist friendly and everybody was a hippie and tripping out and doing their own things. And then, of course, the music people that I've been fortunate enough to gig with and work with and record with, and then comic book world. And wow. It's really, I really have connected in a lot of different arenas, in a lot of different eras. And luckily, you know, I'm still going.
Thank
still
goodness.
Here. Yep. Although I'm home.
And you're home. And you're in the same home. You've lived there for how many
46
years? Wow.
46 years.
That's
now,
amazing.
If someone had told me when I bought this house, I watched this house being built. I rented a house in Laurel Canyon, four doors away for two years. And I watched this house being built. And when I was 22 years old, I had enough money to buy it. So I said, well, that's easy. I'll buy that one. And I literally walked my plants and walked my guitars. Walked my stuff over and
wow.
just put it here. You know, but if someone had said to me, yeah, guess what? Hey, Moomy, I think you're going to be in this house for the rest of your life. I might have shopped around.
You know what? It's a great house. It is warm and it feels like a home. It, you know, it's welcoming. It's you guys.
It's definitely a home. No one's lived here but Moomies. And yeah, there's been a lot of life in this old place.
Without a doubt. Bill Moomin, I hate to end this because I'm so enjoying catching up with you. Please send my love to Eileen and the kids. They probably don't remember me, but of course I remember them. Get the book, the full Moomin. You will get all the stories and in your voice, Bill, and it's just wonderful. Congratulations on it. It's really great. The pictures are amazing. So the stories you tell, the people you've worked with and known, it's really a treat. And right now, a lot of us need an escape from the real world. I've enjoyed spending the better part of an hour not talking about politics because it's freaking me out. So hopefully the next time we talk, things will be better in the world. And maybe I'll get to hug you one of these days again.
That'll be nice. And thank you, Nicole. I'm so happy we could be together here now. And happy birthday to you.
Thank you.
And you're always welcome here. And peace, everybody.
Peace out. Bill Moomin, now you see why I adore this man. Honestly, he was on the show last year when he and Angela Cartwright wrote the book about their time at Lost in Space. And, you know, I had them both on, and I honestly had never met Angela before, though, oh my God, from Sound of Music to Lost in Space to everything else she's done, what an icon. So it was a different kind of interview. This time, just getting to catch up with Bill was a real treat for me, as I'm sure you could tell. You know, he's a dear, dear friend, and though probably 10 years went by when we didn't really speak. I mean, I check in with him via email or whatever, but, you know, I live in Florida. He's still in California, so we grew apart. But, you know, when you have a friend like that, you don't lose the connection. And he is everything you heard. That's the thing about Bill Moomin. And I try to tell people, they think, oh, he was a child star. You know, he's going to be an ego. He's not. That's the guy he is. He's just, now you know why I adore him. So, and the book is wonderful. I mean, it's just all his stories. And he's worked with everyone from Jimmy Stewart to Bridget Bardot to, you know, he was on Bewitched. So it's what we grew up with. Anyway, he's the real deal. So the book is available, I think, next week. It's going to be out in full release. He does have a website, BillMumy.com. And you can follow him on Facebook because he's just like that on Facebook with fans. He interacts with them. He answers questions. He posts songs all the time. So I thought this would be a great way to spend my birthday and not get all crazy and nuts because of the politics, which, believe me, I've got plenty of that. So I was just worried that it might be a bit too self-indulgent, but I'm glad you guys enjoyed it too. He really is. He is as good as a guy as he seems. All right, everybody. I'm going to run because we're going out to dinner for my birthday. So thank you. Thank you for enjoying that as much as I did. I will see you Monday.